from anything in the earth that may bring us into bondage. And as we look to God's word for ourselves, we hear the story of one who was indeed troubled by the bonding influences that were a part of this life. It was about 1,100 years before Jesus would come and deliver his people. God was their king, and they had no other king. They were in the place God had promised that they could live and dwell securely and safely, never to be troubled by drought or famine, never to be invaded by other forces who would come and take from them, if only they would live in deeply daily communion with God, loving connection with him, obeying his life-giving commands, and finding the joy that that would bring. But sadly, like us, and like they were, and like everyone in between, the temptation to live for this world and through this world became too much. And again, God's people rebelled against him. And so he would raise up someone to deliver them, to remind them of the truth, to urge them to come into the life-giving flow of God's goodness again. And into these dark times, one of the deliverers God sent was a judge named Samson. Samson himself had been schooled in the ways of God, but found his own heart often given up to the things of the earth. And rather than judging as an example, he judged as a rebel, who himself was filled with rebellion, deception of the people who cared for him and those who didn't, and even seeking revenge, as we heard a sorry and painful and fire-filled story last week. After several years of antagonism, we find again Samson in places that are not of help to him or others. Hear the word of the Lord from Judges chapter 16, beginning at verse 4.
Sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorech, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her, her people, and said, "See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength, how we can overpower him so that we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." So Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued." Samson answered her, "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have never been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man." Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been strung or even dried, and she tied him with them. With men hidden in the room inside, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes into contact with the flame of fire. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, "You've made a fool of me. You lie to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied." He said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then, with men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Delilah then said to Samson, "Until now, you have been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." He replied, "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took 7 braids of his head and wove them into the fabric and tightened it with a pin. And she called again, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep, pulled up the pin and the loom with the fabric, Then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when you don't confide in me? This is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength." With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazarite, set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to torment him. And his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes and took him down to Gaza, binding him with bronze shackles. They set him to grinding in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. This is the word of the Lord. Praise be to God. Think about this torturous story. It reads so fast, but I can imagine, like you do, that it probably took place over the course of several months, maybe several seasons. Because certainly these things all didn't happen in one night. No. They reflect that there's a sequence of things happening here. And this is a long-term kind of story that gets condensed for us to read it quickly. But we imagine that time has passed and things are remembered and some things are forgotten. Just like life itself, the older we get, the further into the fog some things go. And sometimes we learn the same lesson over again, and sometimes that's painful. And if we really try hard, we learn from those things. But I'd like to suggest to you that there are 3 things taking place here that deserve our thoughtfulness. They're all about environments. We live in environments and we create some of them, and some of them we just enter into based on our employment, our family situation, where we are in life, what's going on around us, the circumstances that happen. But in all of our environments, we are maybe more like Samson and Delilah than we might think. Because environments matter. You see, the first thing that there is in this story is places. There are places that we know. There are places that we go. The Valley of Sorek is where this story takes place. In the original language, the Valley of Sorek means a place of beautiful vineyards. It's interesting to me that it also means it's a valley where there's a wadi, and wadi is where the valley, when it floods sometimes in the spring, water comes down off the mountain, it just rushes. And sometimes it floods, and that's not bad for vineyards if they're propped properly. That's good because the soil's always rich, because the topsoil off the mountain is always coming down in a torrent and feeding the land so that it can sustain good minerals, which create good tasting grapes, which create the best of juices and wines. But therein lies the problem. Because Samson, from his birth, was committed to be one who never touched a grapevine or a grape or its skin or its juice or even its fermented joy. He had been committed to stay away from such places, and yet here he is in the torrent of the vineyards. He's chosen an environment. He's chosen a place where he wants to live, a choice place that's wealthy. And as he abides in this place, it will affect him, and the torrents may overwhelm him as well, and I don't mean just water. We're told in the story that he eventually lays his whole heart out on the table. If only he could have just kept deceiving. Really? Do you want to live your whole life deceiving people? Or do you want to tell the truth and put it out all on the table? Well, here's the deal. If you're in places where it's safe to do that, if you're in places where God's loving truth can embrace that, then that would be a fine thing. But Samson, you're not really thinking very clearly about the places that you're putting yourself, because you're laying your heart on the table in a place where deception has been the beginning of this relationship and will be its end. Torrent will grind you down, and you'll find yourself grinding down in darkness. Places matter. Valley of Sorek, although it's a choice place for vines to grow, and it may look beautiful, appealing, and tasty, it may not be the right place for you. It may not be the right place for me. The second thing in an environment is people. People. You know, the real characters in the story are the man and the woman who are at the front of the stage through each scene. Samson. What is that word even? Samson is a word that means sunlight. It's the solar word for the heat, the light, the warmth that brings life and grows it. Indeed, that he should be named something like that. Sunny ways, that's what his life was supposed to bring. Good things and life and fullness and everything that was needed for his people who were in oppression underneath the Philistines. He was supposed to be the bright spot in their generation. He was to share the light, and everyone who'd see him would know the truth and say, now there's a guy who walks with God. Isn't it bright? Isn't it warm? Isn't it beautiful? But I'm afraid he doesn't even know who he is. He's hanging out with a woman whose name is Delilah. And if you had a Hebrew ear and were hearing the story in its original language, you would say, that's a name that means the darkness of night and trickery. Because that's the word for evening. And when it gets dark and you can't see things clearly anymore and you could trip because you don't know your way forward, that's exactly what this woman's name means. And when I spend time with people who are in deception, people who deceive, people who look out for themselves, but people who lead me into darker places, I find that trickery and unreliability, even money problems, even character problems become even greater and greater, because I've got to figure out how to manipulate and maneuver and protect myself. But sometimes there's an excitement with that, isn't there? Who's going to one-up me, and who can I one-up? And this is a game, and I want to win. But it isn't a relationship that helps me become what I was made to become. It's not a relationship that helps me see things more clearly. It's one that actually will tear me up. And I'll find myself grinding in darkness every day. And there's a third thing about our environments, not just the places and the people, but the patterns. Yeah, three P's. The pattern. The patterns that I establish. The direction that I keep moving toward because that's what I know and that's where I'm going. And maybe it's a career or maybe it's a collection or maybe it's a hobby or maybe it's an addiction. I don't know, but I've established this pattern and here I am again doing this thing again because it brings me a pleasure again. But I know that it also takes a piece away from me every time I engage in it. Samson has a pattern. With this woman, he likes to spend time with her. He likes to spend the night with her. He likes to have manipulative gaming conversations with her. He likes the sexual pleasure that's a part of this relationship. And he's had one before this, and he's had another one before this, but this is where he is. This is his pattern. This is what he gives himself to. And indeed, every day, every month, another piece of him gets taken away, grinding him down one season at a time. And sometimes we find ourselves in patterns that put us in bondage. Yes, addictions to things, to people, to ways of thinking, to neurotic choices. And we find that we wake up one day and say, what in the heck am I doing here? Why does this keep happening to me? How stupid can I possibly be? Why do I keep choosing this thing that just tears me up inside, that takes away from me more than it gives, that robs me of my liberty, my freedom, the joy in this life? How did I get to this place? And I can just about imagine that in Gaza, with bronze shackles, Samson thinks this thought every day. How did I get into this pattern? I was made to be a source of deliverance for God's people, and I can't even deliver myself. Patterns are so hard to break, aren't they? Whether it's not doing something I know I ought to every day, or getting caught up in something I know I ought not every week, I find myself with my eyes being gouged out and bonded and grinding, grinding, grinding. I find it interesting that Samson's only response in all of this is, I'd be like every other man. I'd be like every other man. And every time he one-ups this woman, he says, if you do this, I'd be like any other man. You really think you're something, don't you, Samson? I'm glad you have healthy self-esteem that your parents gave you, just like we want our dear little one to have good self-esteem going forward. But sometimes we think more highly of ourselves than we ought. Sometimes we reaffirm so much we really believe we can break free and stop whenever we want. We can get out of this relationship whenever we feel like we want to. Thank you very much. No one controls me. I'm fully in control of my life. Oh, Samson, you'd like to think you're not like every other person. Oh, believer, you'd like to think that you're not like every other person, but I've got news for you. We aren't as strong as we think we are. We find ourselves in places, in relationships, in patterns that we think we're in control of. But if we're really, really listening, and we're really, really honest, we'll discover quite quickly that our eyes are being gouged out and that we're being ground down. I love Rembrandt's classic picture of this horrific, painful moment of reality. And if you can get close to the center of the picture, you see the soldier right over Samson's head, and he has a metal thing in his hand, and he's about to push it into the eye socket of Samson. How did we get to this moment? Samson, you are stronger. You were given as a gift of God. You had a destiny that was meant to bring light and help to others, but you have let your places, you have let your relationships, you have let your patterns bring you to this helpless, horrific, destructive, irreversible moment. And I grieve for you. As pathetic as you are. Or maybe a more modern interpretation of the same moment that's been done by a 21st century artist. We can feel the manipulation of the curves, the bronze taking over, the darkness, the hollowing holes that are about to be left behind. And if we gaze into that artwork for a moment, we're reminded that we're just as susceptible to the places and the people and the patterns who have the power to press us and grind us down, down, down. But although the Lord departs, because he won't be a part of places and relationships and patterns where darkness spreads its claws, he still sees us, even in those places. And he still longs to begin the thing that will restore our strength again, if only. If only we would look up in our blindness and ask for him to help us break free of the bronze fetters that bind us to the places and the people and the patterns we've walked right into. And even as we grind away, God begins to grow in us the possibility that we can escape. Maybe you're here today and the Spirit has brought to your mind a certain place that's all too familiar, or a certain relationship that's all too comfortable, or a certain pattern that you could do blindfolded. Maybe the Spirit is saying to you, look up, child. Do not let yourself be embonded. Do not let yourself be darkened. Do not let yourself be ground away in this thing that you've put yourself in, for the torrent will come and it will flood the valley and it will take everything away. You have the privilege to be let out, for I am a God who is a loving Father, and when you call out to me, I take you by the hand, and even though you feel blind, I lead you up to higher places, to lighter places, to better places where freedom and joy can fill your life again, and you don't have to be ground down any longer. Dear friends, this is beautiful news. For those who've known God's ways their whole lives, and people who've had no thought of God because there's no relationship or pattern in your life that had anything to do with the divine one, it's an equal opportunity for us all. Our musicians are coming. We're going to sing a song that lets us express that we recognize God as the one we need, and the deliverance that his ultimate deliverer brought, the faithful one, Jesus, who went to places of darkness and brought light, who entered into relationships of pain and deception and brought truth, who entered into patterns that were all destructive and selfish and called people out of them and gave them new pattern and new life that filled them with hope like nothing they'd ever dreamed of. Oh, how he longs to take us by the hand and to bring us out of those places, those patterns, those relationships with people that we need to say to God, you alone are all I need. And I don't know what this means for those places. And I don't know what it means for this people. And I don't know what it means for these patterns. But oh God, I believe that you are the one who will help me to live in truth, will provide for my needs. And through Jesus, you've promised every good thing. Jesus didn't come to judge you for what you've done and who you've been with and how long you've established that pattern. He said that himself. No judgment. That's not what this is about. It's about the goodness he can pour out and shake down and fill up even more in you until it overflows from you. How beautiful is that? We're going to sing this song, "You Alone Are All I Need." And if this is the cry of your heart and you want to express your desire for God to bring his vision back into your life, I invite you to come and kneel so that I could pray with you and agree with you for that. That'd be a pretty bold move, wouldn't it? But I have a feeling it might be just what's needed to break the bronze shackles. Let us sing.
You draw me. Come running.